I would bring you rings of gold. I'd even sing you poetry. And I would keep you from Ohio.
Hello and welcome to episode 18 of Popcorn and Prosecco, where Chrissy, Angie, and I are back in the same room again to talk about How to Train Your Dragon 2, Obvious Child, and 22 Jump Street. All right, who's kicking it off?
I'll kick it off with How to Train Your Dragon 2. So this one takes us back to the island of Berk, where the Vikings and the dragons are now friends. We're 5 years later, Hiccup is 20, as are all his little buddies. And while his dad wants Hiccup to follow in the family business of being the leader of Berk, Hiccup wants to go and explore the world with his friend Toothless. So when doing that, he discovers there is another dragon rider, a mysterious dragon rider, and he also discovers there is an evil dragon trainer who is amassing an army for world conquest. And he needs to stop them with the help of friendly dragons. So yeah, that's the plot. How to Train Your Dragon 2, it's by the same director, Dean DeBlow, who did the first movie, and he wrote and directed this one, and it's cool because you get to, it takes us outside of the Berk we know into these like new lands. There's new dragons, there's new characters, one of them played by Cate Blanchett, and she's badass. One of them's played by Jon Snow or Kit Harington.
He's pretty good in it. That is more emote. He does more emoting like with his voice in this movie than you see in most seasons.
Yeah,
that's what happens.
Also,
when you have that character,
yeah,
facial expression.
Yeah,
he's like, more animated.
Kit Harington is way more fun in this movie than he's been on anything ever.
It's the first time that I was like, Kit Harington.
Yeah,
I like that guy.
He's got a career.
And what's funny is like, especially because he's Jon Snow and so many girls swoon over him in this movie. I forget if it's Rough Nut or Tough Nut, the girl that Kristen Wiig plays.
Yeah. I think
like,
Rough Nut's the girl, right?
I don't remember.
She
literally drools over him all the time in his muscles. And what I love, and this is so, it's so subversive for a kid's movie, there's female gaze in How to Train Your Dragon, which if you don't know what that means, it basically means that typically movies are come from kind of a male perspective where we look at women as sexual objects. But in this one, it's Ygritte, son of Ygritte, or no, not Ygritte.
No,
it? It's something
no.
like that. It's really close.
Oh,
I know I'm getting my...
Eret! It's Eret, son of Eret.
Oh.
You said Ygritte, and now
yeah.
you made it sad.
Sorry, guys.
God damn you.
I was like, wait.
I was like, no, it's close but wrong.
I was like, is that a joke?
It's confusing because there's also dragons, and there's a lot going on. But yeah, overall, I like this movie. I don't think the story is as tight as the last one, but I think the character work is really beautiful. I think the DreamWorks upped the game on the design. I think it's like everyone's a little older and it's amazing because all of the guys are like trying out facial hair and oh, young guys.
They did a really good job with that. They take the 5 year time gap really seriously.
Yeah.
The conditions in the village in Berk really changed. Like you can see how they've like completely changed their entire way of life, and then all the characters, they look more mature. And it's not even just like different hair or facial hair. Like I was literally sitting on my computer before comparing two shots of Hiccup, and there's something about like
it,
the
they actually look
and
it looks older the way
yeah.
I really thought about
yeah.
it. And like it's like nice little touches. Like one of my favorite little touches in the movie is early on in the film, he and Ashton are talking, and their boyfriend and girlfriend things are cool, and she's just idly braiding his hair.
Yeah.
And she makes two little braids, and it's such a little thing, but they're in his hair the rest of the movie.
Yeah.
And it's such
it's
a
really
nice,
cute, sweet
yeah.
touch.
It's like a really smart little touch that like, that kind of continuity just really informs the movie. And
there are a lot of fun little things like that. Like, even the dragons get it, too. Like, I was really excited by, shit, now I forget the dragon's name. But when Toothless meets, now I forget her name, the mother.
Yeah.
Valka, when he meets her dragon and
yeah.
they become buddy-buddy, and like they have a relationship going. It's not just like, oh, they play together and like acknowledge each other. No, Toothless is like the baby that's always doing these things to get to like annoy him in,
yeah.
in like a sibling rivalry kind of way, and that kind of stuff goes a
and,
long way.
And
her
dragon
like,
looks
like
a Muppet, like very strong
oh
Muppet
God.
Features, which I'm also really
the Cloud Jumper.
But what I love
all
about,
I care about is the dragons. I know them all their names.
Yeah,
what
if
I love
you
about
pets,
that,
this movie is it's very much a pet movie.
Oh my God.
It's like everyone that loves animals got really upset.
That's
with
what I
movie.
Wrote in my review. Like, if you don't have a pet, you're gonna want one, and if you have a pet, you're gonna go home and wanna squeeze it to death.
I have a pet and I want a Toothless. My cat is not good enough.
Alright, I
anymore.
Want a Toothless also.
I'm just kidding, Roger, if you're watching this. I still love you, baby. But no, I mean, you were talking about, like, the way that you see the relationships between the dragons, and, like, one of the little ways that they make the world seem really textured is that a lot of it just plays out in the background. Like, you'll have two characters in the foreground, human characters.
It's so true.
That are, like, talking, but if you actually watch the background, you'll see, like, there's, like, a whole little,
like,
drama playing out with, like, Toothless. And,
it's
like,
Toothless and, yeah, and the other dragon.
It's like a silent film in the background of, like, Toothless trying to win the... I don't want to say affections, because it doesn't seem romantic. It seems like respect or something. Like, it's, he's trying so
hard. Yeah,
he just,
like, wants to be their buddy. Like, he's, like, kind of like the kid brother that, like, wants to be with the cool crowd, if anything. It's really, really cute.
And the baby dragons, the cat lady.
Yeah, there's, like, a crazy cat lady.
That might be my favorite character.
That was really funny. Like, you see her in the last movie, but in this one, she comes out at one point, and she's covered in baby dragons, and you're just, like, you instantly recognize that archetype. You're like, oh, she's the crazy cat lady, except with dragons.
Yeah.
And it's, like,
adorable.
It normalizes that all very beautifully.
The only things that I didn't like about this movie, I have a feeling you're not going to be happy about one of them based on what you just said, but I don't like the mother character.
Okay.
And I don't like Drogo either. Drogo.
Drogo is also Game of Thrones. Yeah. No, they're trying to trip us up. It's very confusing.
But my problem with Valka is it's super cool when she's the mysterious dragon rider, and I like the fact that it shows where Hiccup got his thing with dragons from.
Right. Which also,
but
though,
the second she's unmasked and she comes clean, this woman disappeared when he was a baby, and she's been gone for 20 years. She has access to a ton of flying dragons and never once bothered to go home.
I also thought
that he just goes for it.
I also wish that they had done more with the character, because when she was first introduced, one of the most interesting things to me about that character is that she has kind of an isolationist philosophy where, like, whereas Hiccup is going out and trying to change people's minds about dragons, her take is more just like, you know what, fuck it, like, people are never going to come around, I'm just going to chill here by myself and take care of my dragons. And I thought that there would be more of a conflict, but it's introduced, it's a really interesting tension, and then it doesn't really go anywhere meaningful.
Or even if they use that to, like, make her socially inept in a way. Like,
yeah,
she,
like,
had
I kind of felt like the movie, like, Hiccup, as you pointed out, is automatically invested in her and cares about her and likes her, and I felt like the movie kind of assumed...
Stoic does it too.
I felt the movie kind of assumed that we would also be on the same page, whereas, like, I didn't necessarily feel... Like, I was just kind of like... Who is this new character that's coming into this world that I already like? Like, who are you? What is your deal? No, you have to earn my affection.
I like her as a character, but I do think it's problematic that they give her such a dark thing, especially in a kid's movie where, and I mean, she is kidnapped by dragons, but as we point out, like, she has access. She could have gotten home. She could have gotten work. But she doesn't. She never even goes to check up on him. And because they don't develop that more, it left a lot of people being like, well, wait, why is that something we're, like, I think that's totally fair. I mostly just kind of liked the idea of this character a lot, and I liked how, it was also, because one of our commenters on CinemaBlend commented they didn't like the idea that Hiccup's mother was going to take away from his journey in that, like, oh, this has always been a part of him because of her. But it's like, when you see the movie, that's actually not true. They show you a flashback where, like, Hiccup is who Hiccup is, and I thought that was really beautifully done. We have a cat vying for popcorn. But yeah, I understand there are problems. Like I said, I think structurally there's problems, especially in the second act. I feel like a lot of stuff has to happen for the plot, and we're kind of left going, wait, what just went on?
That's the problem with Drago, is that... Like, really,
he's the bad guy, to be clear.
What did he amount to in the end? Why was he doing what he was doing? And why did we need him? We didn't need him. And this isn't a spoiler, because I'm pretty sure it was in the trailer, and I think it's in a lot of press material out there, is that there are these alpha dragons, and he has one.
Yeah.
And that's basically his only purpose in the movie. It's similar to Valka, actually. Her main purpose in the movie is to open up the world to this cave full of dragons. His purpose is to bring in this alpha dragon.
Yeah, I see what you mean. I mean, they seem more like they're there to serve the plot than to be, like, characters that we care about all that much on their own.
Or has a little bit of much motivation. Like, what was Drago even after? He just wanted to control the world with dragons?
It does feel... Now, the more that I think about it, the more it feels like a bridge,
that was a little bit of a problem in the first film, too, where, like, you're very invested in, like, Hiccup and, like, to a lesser extent, Astrid. And to also, you know, also to a lesser extent, Stoic, but, like, like, for example, I still could not name all of his, like, friends. Mm-hmm. Like, I know what they look like, but I could
fish
not
legs.
Tell you what... I could not tell you who's which one is which.
Yeah.
Or, like, what their personalities really are. And, like, you know,
it's a little bit disappointing. You could a little more now. Because
a little
they
bit,
have that,
like
that thing where both of them have a crush on her, and that was a little something.
There's a little more
disappointing.
It's a little bit.
It's... But they don't. They
it's
still
a fun
don't have that
to get
much.
The gang back together.
Right.
But narratively, it's messy. But I think we should wrap up this section. So, would you recommend people see Have Trainer Dragon 2?
Oh my god, yes. If you have a pet, your heart is just going to melt. You're gonna want a pet. You're gonna want every freaking How to Train Your Dragon product too. Because who was I doing it with? Where we were.
You were sending me pictures. It was just like, it was a bunch of text
we
messages.
We all need a toothless in our lives. Go see this movie.
Yeah, I would recommend it too. I mean, I didn't get a chance to talk about this at length, but like in the first one of my favorite things was like all the flying scenes. This one, like, oh my god, I love it. Like,
they got
so,
the
yes, also for the pets, but also like just like being there and like watching it in 3D is a good experience. You really feel like you're flying with them. It was a great experience. So yeah, it has its issues, but overall,
yeah,
recommend.
I think it's fun. I think it's sweet and lighthearted, and you know, I think if you have kids, they'll eat it up. So
yes.
I think all around, it's 3 thumbs up from us.
Yay! So
Dewey
we'll
approves too. Is he even in frame? I don't know.
I don't think Dewey is in frame, but I think if he knew how much you wanted a toothless, he might not approve so much, because then he would know.
He was giving us some serious side eye earlier.
Aww.
See, it makes you want to hug your pets, and it makes them want to run away.
It does not make them want to hug you.
Biggest butt in my face.
So
I don't like that, Dewey. Alright, obvious child.
Yes. So, moving on. I'm going to talk about Obvious Child, which is, it's an abortion romantic comedy, which is not a combination of words you hear very often. It was directed by, is it Gillian Robespierre? Is that her name?
I'm not even
going
to try.
Yeah.
It's Gillian Robespierre.
Something like that. I'm really sorry I forgot to, like, memorize that ahead of time. And it stars Jenny Slate, and it's just about her, Jenny Slate is the main character, she gets out of a breakup, she has a one-night stand, she gets pregnant. And then she decides immediately to have an abortion, which in itself is like actually kind of you know, groundbreaking, because like in every other movie we've seen where that happens, like a Juno or Knocked Up or whatever, it's always like, you know, if they even like think about having an abortion, it's like immediately dismissed. And this is one of the very few movies I've seen where like someone that seems like the kind of person where you can imagine that in real life a woman in this situation would seriously consider having an abortion or have one.
Yeah.
And it felt really groundbreaking to like see that. And not only that, this abortion in this movie is treated the way that I think it's treated in real life by real people, which is that it's neither like, you know, the worst, most tragic thing that's happened to her, nor a decision to be taken lightly. Like,
yeah.
She takes it very seriously, but it's also just like, you know, another step in her life. It's not like, oh my god, this is going to change the course of my entire life and it's going to weigh on me forever. And it was really refreshing.
Yeah, but what's interesting about it especially is when she goes to set up the appointment, they tell her that she has to wait a few more weeks because of developmental reasons, and they said, so the earliest we can book you is, are you free on the 14th? She goes, February 14th, Valentine's Day. And, like, that communicates the tone of this movie to a T. It's really just one of those just kind of, like when life is laughing at your miseries. And and they're like, we could do the 15th, and she's like, that's my mom's birthday, we'll just do the 14th. And, like, Like,
that is what this movie is. It's just a whole lot of laughing at her problems.
Yeah, I mean,
I can totally relate, because it's like, sometimes you do just feel like that there's this, the universe is laughing at you.
I mean, I started out saying that it's groundbreaking, and it is, and I think that's a great reason to watch a movie, but an even greater reason is that it's genuinely really, like, funny and sweet and entertaining. Like, Jenny Slate's brand of comedy, Christy is going to go deal with the cat, because she's a kind person. He was about to push my phone, so thank you, Christy.
Now just your bag will be sacrificed.
That's okay. There's nothing breakable in there. I don't think.
Anyway. We'll find out.
Next time we'll have to give people a Dewey.
So it's just, it's really funny. Jenny Slate's, she's in the movie, she plays a stand-up comedian, and her comedy is, like, very specific and very funny.
And
like,
very graphic.
And like, very graphic.
The movie starts with her talking about vaginal excretions. And it's like, if that makes you go like, oh god, then this may not be the movie for you.
Which is a service, because I feel like there's a few people that might be turned off by this movie. It's immediately like, this is who we are.
Yeah.
You know,
deal with it.
Either you're in or you're out.
It's unafraid. It's saying like, yeah, it's a comedy unlike I've seen before. I mean,
Talking about it now makes me want to go see it again and write down more of her jokes. Because one of her jokes was funny. I can't remember the last time that I've laughed out loud throughout so much of a movie. Because, you know, most of the time with this kind of stuff, and I guess with movies, like, I mean, just thinking of, like, funny people off the top of my head, where it's got all of the better comedic material at the beginning, and then it gets serious. This does get serious. You know, she gets serious and emotional about it. It's not like it's all one big joke. She has real feelings, but the laughs are there from start to finish.
And it's really sweet. Jake Lacy plays the guy that she hooked up with, who, you know, she's now pregnant with his child. He's the guy from the last season of Office, and
he's hanging out behind the table.
The perils of recording in person.
So silent partner.
I hope he doesn't get into that bag.
He came across really well. Like, he was really likable, he was, like, funny. Which
I
should explain.
I can't believe she didn't go for him at the very beginning.
She goes to find the guy from the one-night stand because she's kind of debating whether or not she should tell him.
Right.
And what's interesting is that makes it sound like it's going to be, like, a Lifetime movie.
She doesn't go to find him, though.
Well,
she's just running away.
She thinks about whether to tell him. And then he shows up in her life because... First,
like,
he tries to find
over.
Her, yeah, and then it's like quizzes. But, like, it's one of those things where in a romantic comedy, it would be like, we're supposed to be together because we keep showing up together. And in this, she's like, it almost feels like the universe is, like, spitting in her eye because it's like, here's the guy who's, like, who put a baby in you, and she doesn't know how to handle it, and she's very emotionally immature, but in a way that, like, I can relate to. In my review, I compared it to, it reminds me of Inside of Amy Schumer in Broad City, where it's not just the, like, you know, whimsical parts of being a young woman, it's the ugly, unfun parts of being a young woman. And,
yeah, it reminded me a little bit of Girls in that sense, because I haven't seen the show that you mentioned.
I was thinking of Girls also.
She's not as, like, off-putting as some of the characters in Girls, which I like the show.
It's not
but
as confrontational as Girls.
Unless it's more, like, laugh-out-loud worthy than Girls, too.
Yeah.
Some of the stuff in Girls has gotten a little darker.
It's
dark,
a little, like,
darker seasons. This is not that.
I think it's more like Broad City to that point, and, like, it's just really smart and fun.
Speaking of girls, though, I really like Gabby Hoffman in this.
Gabby Hoffman
She's
is great.
Great.
She plays
She's,
the best friend. And
it's incredible how she can go from such, like, an outrageous, like, character that you don't even want to be near in Girls to someone who feels like a really good, warm friend.
She's believable, and you were, like, I feel like we all have a friend like Gabby Hoffman who, like, kind of knows us for the ugly little freak show we can be and loves us anyway. Like, Gabby Hoffman's great in this, and, like, Richard Kine plays Jenny Slate's dad in this, and I'm forgetting who plays her mom, but she's great.
That's one of my favorite scenes in the movie. When she's sitting in the bed with the mom and they're just talking.
It's a really thoughtful movie. I was really blown away by this movie because it seems like the kind of thing that at once seems a miracle that it exists because they say abortion. She has an abortion.
Yeah.
That's all things that happen, and that just seems so completely...
Abortion, schmishmortion.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
When they couldn't even say it in Knocked Up. That was on TV the other day, and I was like, oh, right, you're in the comedy where you could not even bring yourself
you
to could say
show
the
a crowning
right.
without warning us. But, yeah, but then it's like, conversely, it feels like something we should have had already. Like, watching it didn't make me feel uncomfortable. It just made me feel, like, somehow recognized. Like, some of her jokes are so, like, just there's things about it that it's like I could totally relate to, but I've never heard someone say in a movie.
Oh my god. Yeah, like, it's like, okay, so stuff early on about vaginal secretions, like, one of the reasons I was laughing so hard is because I was like, this is shit that every girl knows, but nobody talks about
there's a
ever.
Lot, yeah,
there's
like
a lot
of
that
stuff,
kind of humor.
But, like, you might hear in a comedy club, because in a comedy club it's like, what, 30 people? So, like, if people aren't on board, whatever, but, like, it's a very different thing.
It's also nice because she's so close to our age, too. Like, everything that she was dealing with is very relatable. I mean, not every little thing, but a lot of it.
Yeah. It really did feel like watching one of your friends, you know, someone that you would actually know, go through something that would actually happen to them. Albeit, you know, these people are much funnier than we are, but and better written. But, you know, overall, it felt very real.
I think we're all big fans of this one.
It was just like, it's such a, like, a warm, sweet, and
it's
hilarious
sweet
movie.
I feel like people are going to hear abortion rom-com and cringe, but, like, it's really sweet, this movie.
I think people also sit through this entire movie and picture Marcel the Shell with shoes on. Because that is her voice.
Yeah. Perry was traumatized. That's what she knows Jenny Slate.
Yeah.
The whole time she was thinking about Marcel
got pregnant and had an abortion.
You're like, Marcel, what has happened to you? This is not the Marcel.
On that note, maybe we should move on to our next topic, but I'm assuming this is
another three thumbs up, I think.
Yeah, thumbs up all around for this one.
Yeah.
Alright, so I've got this next one. 22 Jump Street. So it's Jonah Hill and Channing Tatum back again, and this time they literally move from 21 Jump Street to 22 Jump Street, where they have a much nicer facility. And this time around, their case takes place on a college campus where they're assigned to pretend to be college students and figure out who is selling this deadly drug called Wi-Fi, W-H-Y-P-H-Y, and all this crazy stuff happens. And kind of similar to how it went down in high school, the two of them end up in two separate kind of social groups. I never know what to call them when I'm talking about them.
They're Jenko and Schmidt.
I think Jenko and Schmidt, and then it's Doug and
Brad. Yeah.
I'm just gonna say Channing Tatum was in the frat, and Jonah Hill was not very welcome to the frat. And he was kind of like an outcast, but he got the girl.
He ends up, to the extent that he ends up in the artsy group. And he starts dating. Is her name Ashley Stevens from Greek?
I don't know.
A spoiler. That is a spoiler.
Oh, fuck me. Oh, bummer. Well, I'm gonna cut that out somehow.
Do you want to start over?
No, it's okay. Let's keep going. I'm gonna edit this.
But yeah, Jonah Hill gets the girl again. Which one? We never find out what happened to Brie Larson's character, which is
weird. She's never even referenced or
because the movie is obsessed with the first movie. Because they're like, aside from the plot line, there's a whole meta context to it where they keep talking about how sequels are never as good and they're just repeats of the same thing and blah, 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 blah. And there's all these jokes about how you guys did so well with the last mission, we gave you more money this time. And then there's like a point where they've run out of money, so they tried to shoot this chase scene by not using money. So there's like a part where you see them drive into a building and they're like, wow, there are lots of robots, but we're still outside.
Yeah.
And like stuff like that.
I loved the self-aware part of this. Sure. All that stuff. But that's what I had.
That's why not mentioning Brie Larson is weird to me. And also too, that in two movies, the Jonah Hill had a hand in writing. He ends up with a girl who is super good looking. And from, like, I have no idea why he's supposed to be attractive in this. I'm not even saying physically. Like, it's college, whatever. But, like,
there is, yeah, because he ends up with a girl, but it's never clear why she likes him, other than that she laughs at people's jokes. But,
he's a jerk.
We all know. Yeah, the real reason is because Jonah Hill wrote this movie.
Yeah.
And those were the conventions of comedy, and it's what
and that's exactly it. They don't have a good chemistry together.
No.
And, like, her whole character is essentially doing this. Every time he talks, like
her entire thing that she does in the movie is laugh at his jokes.
Yeah.
See, but that's the point of this movie. None of it's supposed to make sense. You're not supposed to believe in any of the relationships. It's one joke after the next, which is why I liked it so much.
I want to talk about my favorite character though, which is
I know what you're gonna say.
Jonah Hill. So we just talked about how he has a love interest. She was in Greek. I think her name is Amber Stevens or something. I'm really sorry. I did such a bad job.
I think you just called them both Stevens. Something Stevens. No.
I don't know.
What'd you call the other one?
No. But so anyway, what I was trying to say is that's
without the net, guys.
That's
literally
his love interest.
Without the internet.
That's his love interest.
I have my phone right by me. That's pretty stupid.
But her roommate. That's what I was trying to get at.
Her roommate.
She's not my favorite character. We just got sidetracked. Her roommate is
bomb.
This like no nonsense girl who just has no fucking patience for Jonah Hill and keeps making jokes about how like old and decrepit he is, and she is hilarious.
She's so funny.
She's the poor bastard that has to be in the room while they have sex on.
Which, if anyone who's lived in a college dorm would
okay,
have seen
the girlfriend is Amber Stevens,
right?
And the roommate is Jillian Bell.
Yes.
And Jillian Bell is hilarious.
She steals every scene.
She is the Melissa McCarthy of this movie.
Yes.
We should see lots more of her.
Yeah.
She's the one that I walked up being like, I want her to be cast in like the next five comedies I watch.
I
want to
be her for Halloween.
Her and Channing
Tatum.
I've got to give him credit.
Also,
he ever since he started doing comedy, I've appreciated him a million times more.
Yeah.
And I love just looking
sure.
at him in anything.
I think 21 Jump Street was a big turning point in his career.
He plays dumb really beautifully. There's one scene in this where he figures something out that the audience has already known, and they literally do like a countdown until he gets it.
And then
that scene is
freaks
great.
Out and shouts and like runs around. It's really funny. But I also want to throw out that I'm gonna forget his name. I'm so sorry. I should have looked this before. But the guy who plays his frat bro, he's
Kurt's son. That's Lonnie. Lonnie liked Obvious Child.
Say
right?
Hi to the camera, Lonnie.
Oh shit.
Do you
want to?
Okay, you can go to the room.
I'll do it. Can I say hi?
Yeah, say hi.
Oh, that's me. Hi.
That's Harry's other cat.
That's terrible. That's my sister, Lonnie. All right, wait. We're talking about the frat brother.
His name's like
yeah.
Zook or something.
Shit. What's
like,
his name?
It's like Zook.
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 Well, that's his name.
That's
the name
of the. Yeah, he's not like Zook or
Russell.
Quaid's.
Is it Quaid's son?
No, it's Kurt Russell's son.
It's Kurt Russell's
son. That's what I meant. But he's handsome and he looks like Kurt Russell and he's very funny in this and like. It's like him and Channing Tatum meet over a meet cute. That's a literal meet cute.
You'll see it. We won't
Wyatt
explain
Russell.
It here.
Wyatt Russell.
Really,
and like,
cute
he's instantly likable. Like, I didn't know he was Kurt Russell's son until afterwards, but then I was like, that makes so much sense because I liked him instantly. Like, he's just.
Yeah. I thought this movie was funny overall, but to me, it felt. It just. And then this happens a lot with sequels and it almost can't be helped, but it just feels less fresh. Like, for one thing, like, the other one came as, like, such a surprise. This one, you know, even the self-awareness was like, haha, we get
it's
what
funny.
We're doing. And it was, like, a little, just a tiny bit less funny to me because
I found
like,
it the other
that.
Way. Like, I found, I still, I like both movies. I like the first
I like
one. But
one
I found I found the first one a little too familiar because it felt like all other comedies. But the fact that this one took a meta spin on what they already did, that felt fresh and exciting.
See, I like that. But I felt like it was really heavy-handed, where, like, instead of giving us new jokes about character and action, it was just more and more jokes about, like, sequels and convention.
Yes, to
and
the point where it was almost a little too...
Diminishing returns.
Yes.
Though
and
I have to
if
say,
you, if you think
stay for
far,
the credits, because they play a
oh
lot with
God.
That, and
the
credits
are
the...
In my opinion,
they're
the
strongest
part.
I would have no problem with more movies if they worked with someone.
I want
credits.
Number 27. I won't say what it is. But
well,
I
don't
know
the numbers. You'll see.
Yeah.
Stop spoiling things for everyone.
Seriously, what's with us tonight?
You people. Yes. I don't know. The other thing I wanted to bring up, though, is like there's been some talk about whether. So a lot of the humor in this movie comes from like the whole like, you know, romantic, like gay but not really thing, where like there's, you know, like there's like be cute, like you mentioned, and
yeah.
like the whole like, you know,
Jonah
like Schmidt and
Jekyll's
like entire dynamic is like they're a couple that
and they
kind
literally
of
go to
apart.
Couples counseling at one
yes.
point.
And so there's been like some back and forth about like whether that's kind of like, I don't know if homophobic is too strong a word, but like whether it's kind of a weird thing to like do in this day and age. I don't think it's necessarily homophobic, like, you know, against gay people, but it is like, you know, the joke is, haha, look, these bros are so straight,
yeah.
they're obviously not gay. And to me, that just starts to feel a little bit stale in an age where, like, you know, there are more states that have okayed gay marriage than
I don't
not.
Think I read into it that much.
No, I mean, I thought, like, I think that the convention is tired because we've got this, especially with Jonah Hill. Like, Jonah Hill did super bad, and Jonah, like, we
yeah,
get it.
He does
it
a lot.
Yeah, like, that's like his bread and butter is doing bromance.
He
like,
does
even
it
Wolf of Wall
the
Street.
End.
Yeah. And even in Wolf of Wall Street, like, that's the thing. He's the guy who's,
Moneyball.
Like, fixated.
He's the guy who's, like, gay for the dude, but not really
does
gay.
Jonah,
don't worry,
is Jonah Hill
Street.
In a movie where he's not in a bromance? That's, like, a legit question. Anyway, we'll give it
comment
to
down below if you think of one.
Yeah,
we'll give you
I'm genuinely curious. Yeah, that's a good idea.
Oh, he had a cameo in 4-Year-Old Virgin where he is only in, he's not
even
long enough
anymore.
To have a crush on someone.
I thought of one, you guys.
I win.
Angie gets a shout
can
out.
Can we say
week.
Knocked Up? Because he has a lot of romance.
He has so much romance
in
that.
Up.
He is, like, literal. We don't even get into it. Anyway, but the point is, I don't think that bromance in and of itself is homophobic because. You know, and in this, it's much more about that caring relationship than it is just being so into, like, a dude.
But don't you think it's weird that, like, the only framework for two guys with a really intense friendship is, like, oh, gay, but no homo?
No,
it's
that's
not the
question.
Only framework, though. I mean,
it's really
it's not
even
necessarily. But in this
movie,
it's not even
there is a section
that.
Where
there's supposed to be brothers in this too.
Yeah,
like you
not
can,
actual
you can look
brothers.
At it one way or the other. No, not
CJ
actual, not actual
brothers.
Brothers, but like they act like real siblings. So you could take it one way or the other, the bromance or a
sibling
thing.
I think they split up the bromance thing way more than the sibling thing.
Yeah.
Like,
I don't
for
think
example,
it's
there's
between
one scene
Jonah
where...
Hill and Channing Tatum. I think it's much more so, it obviously, is more so between Channing Tatum and Wyatt Russell.
Well, to me,
that's,
the dynamic...
That's that part.
To me, the dynamic is Jonah Hill and Channing Tatum are like the couple that's been together for a long time, and they're sort of growing apart, and then Channing Tatum meets someone new and exciting. So I don't think it's mutually exclusive. I think
there is I will give you that. That makes a lot of sense.
Specifically about the treatment of gay people, which considering the whole Jonah Hill thing last weekend is ironic and whatever, but I'm not going to get into all that nonsense. But the point is that Channing Tatum's character takes a human sexuality class and is really surprised to learn, like, about, like, language and the importance of language. And so I feel like that's something they're sort of aware of.
I wouldn't go so far as to say it's homophobic. I just feel like it feels tired at this point.
I would agree with that. I don't think it's
like,
homophobic.
Like, I feel like I have hit my limit on, like, how many times I'm gonna laugh at, like, isn't it hilarious that these guys are gay but not really?
Yeah.
And I don't mean that, like, you know, I still laugh in this movie. I thought it was funny. But I did, like, kind of, I was kind of aware of myself getting, like, all right, but
like,
seriously,
we're just talking
we can move
about,
on to a different joke now.
We're just talking about how revolutionary obvious Child is and that it takes all these new risks. And, like, that's the thing. 22 Jump Street is fun. It doesn't take a lot of risks.
Can you blame the studio, though? Look how much money that first one made.
And, I mean, this one is totally complaint. Like,
I like 22 Jump Street is serviceable. I think it's fun. I think it has some really solid jokes that made me laugh pretty hard. But, like, I don't need to see that, this movie, like, ever again. Or, like, Obvious Child, like, I'm already excited to see again. Like,
I would say this is a movie that if it comes on TV, I'll just leave it on. Sure. I had a lot of fun watching it. I think it's well worth anybody's money if you just want to go out and have a good time. But if, I probably wouldn't go buy it and watch it again.
Yeah.
Whereas with 21 Jump Street, I felt like as soon as I saw it the first time, I was like, oh my god, I want to see this movie again. It was so funny.
Exactly.
This one just isn't as great.
That one.
This one just doesn't feel that way to me. So overall, I would say I don't know, or should we recommend or not recommend?
I recommend.
I would say, you know, if you like 21 Jump Street, you should watch this. You'll probably like it. But I would also say that you don't need to go to great lengths to see it. Eventually, it'll pop up on FX, and you can catch it then, and it'll still be funny.
Yeah. It's fine.
It's fun! Don't get me wrong. Yeah. It's funny. It's entertaining. The chemistry between Hill and Tatum is
still
good.
Really good.
It just, like, isn't... It just doesn't, to me, at least, it didn't reach the heights of the first one.
We only almost went 3 for 3.
I don't know, those are, like, not even, like, thumbs down, so they're, like, sideways.
It's, like, sideways thumbs.
If you had to force it, I would say thumbs up.
They should do it, like, percentages like that.
If I had to say it up or down, I would say up. What about you?
If I had to say up or down.
You have to choose one.
Alright, I'm satisfied. We're 3 for 3.
9 thumbs this week!
And that's all the time we've got. Thank you guys for watching again. And as always, follow along. You can catch us on Twitter, Popcorn Prosecco. Subscribe to our YouTube channel, Popcorn Prosecco. We're also at popcornprosecco.com. And all three of us are all over the internet. Who wants to take it first?
I can be found on Cinema Blend and The Mary Sue. Check me out on Monday because we do the last Game of Thrones episode recap. And I'm on Twitter at Christy Puchko, KristyPuchko.
You can find me on Twitter at AJHAN, and you can find my writing on slashfilm.com.
I link all my writing to littlemrcritical.com, and my Twitter handle is PNemiroff. Thank you guys so much for watching. We will see you next time.
Cheers! Yay.